Do you want to be a great physical therapist or physical therapist assistant? Of course you do. You want to help your patients. Where do you want to do it? Well, that's personal to you. Let your PT or PTA license take you where you want to go. Travel physical therapy positions in all 50 states and DC in all settings. Where? AUREUSmedical.com. That's AUREUSmedical.com. Go there and pick out what's important to you. Let your license take your career where you want it to go. Aureus Medical Staffing, AUREUSmedical.com.
Make sure to follow us online at PT Pinecast and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love
you. I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
There we go. We're live. Welcome to Happy Hour, everybody. I'm psyched to see you. Welcome to PT Pinecast, a show that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight, remarkable ideas, and motivational stories. That's what you guys are looking for. Broadcasting live from the Aureus Medical Studio, also known as, you know, it's just my living room, man. I call it a studio just to sound fancy, but I just want to level with you guys. Leaders in hashtag travel PT. So if you're looking to have that PT license, move you about the country, do what you want to do, where you want to do it, find them online. AUREUSmedical.com. That's AUREUSmedical.com. Go there. I'm Jimmy McKay. I'm your host. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast, the Ears Edition, at iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and now video casting as well on the YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, at PT Pinecast on the socials. Great show for you tonight. We're talking physical therapy with persons amputations. All right. Our guest, clinical professor at UCSF, where he treats the orthopedic, sports, and amputee populations. He also works on the interprofessional specialized amputee clinic team. We're going to get into that, including something like called the Osseo Integration Program. I don't know what that is, but the easiest way to find out is to ask him. Let's welcome in our guest right now, Danny Keller. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
All right. First question is always the hardest. We get the first questions out of the way. What are we drinking? What's on tap for you tonight?
Well, I didn't have a lot of time to prep between work and the podcast. So I went easy. Went with the Kona Longboard. One of my favorites.
It's got one of the best taglines. Liquid Aloha. That's a great beer tagline.
Especially right now, there's nowhere I'd rather be than on the beach drinking this beer. So I'll have to take just the latter portion of it. Eventually go with the former.
I like it. I'm staying close to them. I've had this on the show before. This is the Juice Bomb IPA. I'm doing it. And we just started selling these things online again. We got some more in. It's the I Drink and I Know Things. My favorite line from Tyrion Lannister in Game of Thrones. And my buddy designed the official PT Pinecast, PT Pine Glass. So cheers to you, Danny. Welcome to the show. Thank you. Thank you.
Cheers.
The first round brought to you by our friends from Owens Recovery Science, single source for clinicians looking for certification in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment you need to apply it properly. I always pause for a dramatic effect, properly in your clinical practice. OwensRecoveryScience.com. They've also got their own podcast where they go really deep on BFR training with Johnny Owens, Kyle Kimbrell, and the rest of the team out there. So check them out, OwensRecoveryScience.com. Danny, pretty cool intro. You do some really, really interesting stuff. You're on the Twitter at, tell everybody your Twitter handle.
At the Bowtie PT. Can't beat it, man. Come on.
And when you popped on just before we went live, I was like, I'm thinking, if he's at the Bowtie PT, that's his thing. If he's not on a podcast where now we do video, I can attest to the listeners at home who are just listening to the pod, Danny wearing the bow tie. So you got a couple of different roles, right? In professor at UCSF. And, you know, we were talking just before we went live as well. Things out there, unprecedented as well in terms of fires. How are things going? I'd be a bad podcast host if I didn't ask that.
Yeah, it's wild. It's the conversation was every patient I saw today. It started out the same way. How's the apocalypse? It's pretty crazy. It looks like a sepia tone out the window. Some have called it looking like you're in an old Western. So it's pretty wild. It's kind of crazy out here, California, a whole West Coast. I feel for all the people that are losing their homes and losing their families. And it's pretty rough. We had a patient earlier today whose family, she's from Paradise, which obviously has a bad history with fires. And there's a big fire up in that area right now. She's got friends that just got evacuated. She was in tears at the beginning of the session. And so it's affecting a lot of people. And I just, we're so thankful for the firefighters out here working their butts off to try to get these things under control. And it's tough to watch, but you know, all we can do is try to stay positive and move forward. So,
you know, this brings something up that we talk about a lot on the show and within the profession, which is you need to take into account things outside of the clinic, but inside the patient's lives, where if you're saying, hey, I'm not really sure why I'm getting no progress, or why this person, you know, seems distracted, there could be some pretty serious things in this person's life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, looking at that patient as a whole, and it's a conversation we have a lot, whether we're working, you know, with students or we're working kind of talking in Twitter, right? There's a lot of conversations about treating the patient as a whole. And a huge part of that component is, what's their psychological health like? And unfortunately, right now, with everything that's going on, I mean, the other day we had a power outage. It was 109. There was an earthquake. There's all the fires, so you can't go outside because the air quality is horrible. And, you know, people, they're isolated. They can't, if you can't even go outside and you can't go anywhere, like, it's just, it's very, very hard on people. And when we talk about how that affects depression and anxiety and pain, right? The emotional aspects of pain, it's playing a big role. And so it's pretty tough, pretty tough.
Yeah. Well, I do hope the best for you guys. You're working remotely right now. You know, you said you're 100% remote. Talk about that, like the reasons behind it, and then how you're adapting, because you're also a clinical instructor remotely. What? I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. It's been pretty crazy. It's been a pretty wild ride. You know, I've never worked this much telehealth before. So for me, it's, you know, I was kind of forced into it early on. My son, had cancer last year. And so went through treatment for lymphoma last year. Luckily he's doing great. He's in remission. Good. So we're just trying to keep him healthy. And so right around the time COVID really started to hit hard, I talked to my clinic and said, listen, you know, I'm not feeling super comfortable about this. This thing's starting to get a little crazy. The NBA is canceling games and there's something serious happening here. So I think I need to call out. And we had a discussion. The dean of our program, Amber Fitzsimmons, she's amazing. She emailed me immediately and said, hey, listen, we want to try to find a way for you to start doing telehealth remotely. We're working on it. We had been able to do it from the clinic previously. So we had done a very small amount up until that point. And so our clinic was pretty great. UCSF dove right in and said, let's do this. And right as it started to hit, we were basically 100% telehealth throughout our practice. Wow. Everyone was doing some form of telehealth. You know, parents whose kids weren't going to school had to go home and they were doing telehealth from home. So they were able to work. And, you know, I was so thankful to have that support and have a job at that point.
Yeah.
And so we took that and because of that, I really said, hey, listen, I'm going to take this serious and I'm going to run with this. And so we dove into the telehealth component of it and said, how can we make this better? How can we make this the best for the patients? How can we make this the best for the clinic? So we started putting together telehealth surveys and getting some satisfaction. And we actually have a paper that's about to be printed in the PT Journal on patient satisfaction for telehealth.
Wow. Good for you.
So it's been good. You know, it's a learning curve, and being a CI on telehealth is very different than being in the clinic.
So just to be clear, that student is completely remote. That person, that student is not coming in to your physical space.
With me. So it's a split right now. And so I have one colleague who is also working with her, and he's part-time in clinic, part-time telehealth. No one's full-time in the clinic yet. So, cause we have to maintain space and our gym is one big area. So he's part-time. So she goes into the clinic once to once and a half a week. But she's with me about 2 days a week, full days, 10-hour days on telehealth. So it's
on telehealth. Wow. Yeah. What's something you've learned from that, being a CI by a telehealth?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, so, you know, I've spent a lot of time being a CI, and I am one of those therapists that uses manual therapy. I know it's dangerous. Look out. But I'm
going to do it. Look out for your
Twitter. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, generally I am doing about partly manual therapy and then a lot of exercise and patient education. And this has forced me to grow in the sense of how I educate my patients, how I educate and work with the student to be able to transition with the patient, how exercises are prescribed. And so I actually think I'm a stronger therapist now, having had to go through all this process and also teach other people how to do this. And so it's been kind of exciting for me to really change it up. Cause when you've done CI work in the clinic for a long time, it's pretty much the same thing every time, right? You're working with patients, you're going through the same things, you're teaching them the same things. And with this, it's been like, we're all getting used to this. This is new for me. This is new for you. This is new for everybody. So how do we learn this together? And so I think it's been great. My student's fantastic. She's really good. She's totally all in about learning this stuff. It's been interesting, but it's been fun. And I think she's learning a lot about how you can use technology and how we can transition this into hopefully eventually kind of a hybrid situation where we can.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, podcasting, telehealth, these things are not, they're not technology saviors, right? They're transmitting spoken word. Yes, it can make it go further. It can break down barriers, but there still needs to be the human component. What are you going to put into this computer thing here? What are you going to send through this microphone? So I think, you know, for a hot minute, it took a lot, you know, teachers right now, you know, how many people are home right now, you know, trying to become a math teacher, for a fourth grader for the first time in 25 years. It's going to be ugly at first, and then you're going to start to figure it out, and you're going to get a rhythm, and that's what we need, right? What do we know about neuro rehab? It's reps, and the more you get, the better you're going to be. So that's cool that you guys have pivoted. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. That you could be a CI via telehealth. That's an option. That's pretty cool.
It's wild.
It is wild. Let's talk about. We really wanted to share information about amputee. Yeah. What are some things about working with patients with amputations that you think are important to know? What's some of the information you pass along to your students?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. You know, the amputee rehab world is not a huge world, right? Outside of the VA, most people don't see a lot of amputees. And even me for years, I didn't see a lot of them until I came to UC. And, we have a pretty amazing group. And so I got asked to be a part of it and I dove right in. I was excited about it. I had seen a couple of amputees as a student at UCSF working with another one of my colleagues, Rami Weinberg. You start to see these patients and it's so inspiring. I mean, it's such an amazing population of people. I absolutely love working with amputees. And I think the biggest thing to realize is a lot of people dive into it going, well, this is just like rehabbing anybody else. They just maybe don't have a full limb or they don't have a couple full limbs, but it's different, you know, and you really have to be able to have that conversation with a patient and say, you know, let's talk about this. Tell me what's going on with you. Tell me what the biggest struggles you're having. And you really have to understand what the common struggles are with amputees, you know, whether it be socket fit issues or working with a prosthetist, being really close with the prosthetist so that they can make their adjustments and understanding what can go wrong with a prosthetic if it falls out of alignment and how that's going to affect their gait or how it's going to affect some sort of pain that they're having. So those components of understanding the mechanics of it, of the prosthetics themselves, and then understanding the emotional side of it is really important.
Yeah, you've got to be a little bit of a mechanic because sometimes they might not, you might be in front of them, but they're prosthetists. They can't get an appointment for a couple of days or a couple of weeks. So you got to understand, how can I improve this fit? I'm sure skin breakdown probably is, skincare is another area that that is important to educate on. Not long ago, I'd say 2 weeks ago, we had Ryan Hendrickson, who is a United States Army Green Beret, took a really serious blow to the leg and then wound up coming back to full duty. And he talked about, you know, going on 20, 30 mile hikes and not wanting to take his sock off because he's like, I didn't know if I was going to see a chunk of skin fall off. So he's like, I just wanted to keep the boot on because if that were to come off, I'm done. And he lucked out because he said, and he thanked Johnny Owens, who we mentioned at the top of the show. That's actually how I got in touch with Ryan and found out about his book, Tip of the Spear, by the way, great book. And he talked about how the great education from his PTs, from his OTs, from his medical staff saved his leg and ultimately in his mind saved his identity, as you just alluded to, because he's like, I was a Green Beret, man. And if I couldn't do that, I didn't know what I was going to do. So it's part of, you know, saving their identity and paying attention to that, I'm guessing, comes up a lot.
It's one of my favorite parts is being able to take someone who, you know, just recently had an amputation. And I mean, that's a big change in your life, especially if you've been somebody that's high level, like a Green Beret or a veteran in general who, you know, was a high level military personnel or any of those types of people that have lived their life at this very, very, very elite level or just wanted to walk and were just normal walking. And now all of a sudden they can't walk. That's a big cut. And then there's the combined topic of why did they get the amputation? Was it traumatic? Yeah. Was it oncologic? What's the issue there? You know, when it comes to oncology side of things, there may still be things that are going on with that amputee that aren't going to stop right away. Is there going to be chemotherapy? Is there going to be radiation? Is there potentially another surgery that they're going to lose another limb? So there's a lot of conversation that goes on. But the idea of being able to say to people, listen, I know right now this is really hard for you, but in 2 years, 3 years, there's so much potential. There's so many things you can do, and showing examples of these people that can go out and do these things. It's like my favorite part, because it's like, I'm going to get you there. This is where we're going to be in the end. Stay with me. I know this is going to be hard. We're going to have these conversations. There are going to be challenges. But at the end of the day, this is my goal for you. My goal is not just get you to walk in. My goal is to get you doing what you want to do. And that's the most fun part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Johnny Owens talked about that when he, you know, worked at the Center for the Intrepid, talking about, hey, when you're sitting in a room full of a bunch of people who have, you know, suffered limb loss, and you get to point to people and you say, well, that, you know, how bad you've had it. This person's lost, you know, three limbs. You know, Travis Mills, it has a Travis Mills Association, mm-hmm. Or excuse me, foundation up in the Northeast. And they said Travis was great. I mean, he lost four limbs, yeah. And he was still going. And they're like, hey, whenever Travis is in the house, I don't care how bad you had it. All the therapist had to do is, Travis lost four.
Right.
How about your day? And then Travis would come on over and go, I'm still having a good day. Let's go. So that was it was a really good example of how do you use the people around you as springboards for success. Let's talk about the interprofessional team in Amputee Rehab. Who's on it? Obviously, we're partial to the PT, but let's make sure we know who else is on the team and how they join in and help.
Yeah, it's been a pretty interesting situation for me. I've never worked in such a big interprofessional team. I've always believed in interprofessionalism and working together with this stuff, but you never really get the opportunities, even at a medical center. And so when we started this group, which started as the osseointegration team, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. You know, it started out as a orthopedic oncologist who was the surgeon working with the osseointegration patients. And then he brought in my coworker, Rami, who then brought me in. So there's two physical therapists, nurse practitioners. There's a pain management specialist. Now we have a pain psychologist. We have a case manager. We have prosthetists on the team. Psychology. We have exercise physiology, so we can do lab testing. We have researchers, PhD researchers who are doing research on the topics. And so you get, you know, it's a little overwhelming for some of the patients when sure. 20 people walk into a room, but you really have everyone there who can answer any question that person has, which is pretty amazing to watch when you see it go around the circle and everybody's kind of jumping in and chiming in. And that patient walks out and goes, wow, I didn't expect to get all the answers that I had today answered. So
yeah. It's been how's that work? You know, do they have a standing appointment with, do they make new appointments with, or how does that in your particular location, how does that work? You know, when there's a patient, how does the team operate?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we do a monthly clinic. And so, again, it started out as an osseointegration clinic, has become more of a specialized amputee clinic because we've started getting people who maybe aren't going to do the osseointegration program for one reason or another. They're interested in it. They aren't a candidate for it. But we still try to help them out with whatever problems they're having in their amputee function. And so being able to have surgeons and plastic surgeons and prosthetists who can maybe adjust the prosthetics, maybe they haven't had a good prosthetic fit that hasn't really worked for them, and our prosthetists are amazing and they can do some amazing things. Maybe they haven't had regular physical therapy and we say, let's get you into PT and let's see what we can do with you. So basically they kind of hear about us through word of mouth or through other physicians, and then they can give us, they can get scheduled with us for our monthly clinic. And then we see a bunch of patients in a row, and then we do a meeting afterwards and discuss each of the patients and what the plan is for each of those patients. And then from there, they kind of follow up maybe next month, maybe 2 months out, maybe they're just going to go over to PT or prosthetics or both. Maybe PT and prosthetics is going to do a joint session with them. So it kind of just spreads out from there and becomes this flower where it starts with one visit and kind of becomes whatever it is that person needs.
That's great. I mean, that's the kind of thing we all, you know, people ask about on social media and in discussions, like, wouldn't it be great if, and sir, it sounds like it's there. Osseointegration, what is that?
Yeah. So traditional amputees, right? One of the biggest problems with an amputee, if you've ever seen an amputee, is skin breakdown, like you talked about, and socket fit. There's a ton of change in fluid volume over the years, and especially in the first year or so, where that volume of the limb is really changing. A lot of prosthetic fitment issues for a lot of amputees, and especially if they're a shorter amputee, you know, they're a transfemoral, but it's really high. They have a really small residual limb. Fitment in a socket's really difficult. And so the idea behind osseointegration, there's a few groups that have done it. But we worked with a group who, the implants were based on tooth implants. And so, initially it's through a group called Integrum, And what we do basically is they go in and they put an implant into the, right now we're doing transfemoral. They also do it transtibial and transhumeral in other places, Switzerland mostly, or Sweden. And so they put the implant in, and it's basically just a screw that goes in to that implant, and it, there's a little abutment piece that sticks out at the end of the femur. So stage one is a two-stage surgery. They first put the implant in into the bore into the femur, and then they let it heal. It takes about 6 months or so, and then they go back in and they actually take all the musculature around it, sew it down to the end of the bone, and put the screw piece in. And what that does is by sewing the muscle and some of the fascia to the bone, to the end of the femur, it actually reduces infection risk, but it also gives you function out of those muscles that a lot of amputees don't have. So now they can use their hamstrings, they can use their quads, they can use their adductors to get a little bit more function. They get more proprioception because they're getting feedback through the implant actually into the bone. And you don't have the socket because there's a connector called the axor that connects straight onto the tip of the implant that sticks out, and just allows them to quick connect it on, and they can just put it on, screw it tight, walk away.
So it's like, I mean, you're making them kind of like an adapter, a socket. So it's no longer a socket where you're trying to get a fit where you might go up or down, you know, a couple, you know, some ply. Yeah. You're literally plugging in, going right into that bone, waiting for it to heal. And then you're able to fit the prosthetic to that. And now there's a really, really good connection.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about the socket itself going around the limb. You don't have to worry about sensitivity of the limb. You don't have to worry about skin breakdown other than just where the actual implant is coming out.
The opening like, or I should say, like, what's that area around that socket?
Yeah, it's one of the questions we get the most is, isn't that a big infection risk? And it was one of the big questions that I had initially was, you have this thing sticking out of the femur. Isn't there a big infection risk there? And what I would say is we actually have a fairly low percentage of deep infections that come about. It's very low. Percentage of a superficial infection, it happens fairly regularly. Most people will get at least one superficial infection that they'll have to treat with just oral antibiotics. Sure. But basically the skin penetration site where the implant comes through, the idea is that it kind of scabs around that area and creates this barrier to bacteria getting in there. And so the majority of the time, as long as it heals around there pretty well, it's no big deal. Occasionally people won't fully heal to the metal. They'll just kind of scab around it, and it'll always kind of be a little bit more mobile on there. They might drain a little bit. We just tie some gauze at the top of it. But for the most part, people do really well. It takes a little bit to get used to. It's a pretty sensitive thing in the beginning when you start kind of messing with that implant and you're stressing the bone. But we have a very stepwise progression. We start with a short prosthesis where they're on their hands and knees working on weight shift, and then we work them into a longer prosthetic with a mechanical knee, and then we work them into a microprocessor knee, and if they're going to go there.
So, I'm not looking for a specific number, but what's the percentage of people who are getting infections from skin breakdown when they're using traditional? I mean, I know it happens, but, you know, ballpark it for me. Is it half, less than half?
Yeah, I mean, I would say less than half. I don't think that there's a lot of infections from skin breakdown with traditional sockets. It happens for sure, depending on hygiene and those types of things. You know, it's depend on that person, how they take care of it, how well they manage it, those types of things. It's going to happen. You know, I would say superficial infection, you're going to see a higher percentage of superficial infection probably in the osseointegration group. But again, it usually happens once or twice during the actual kind of healing process, the first year or two. And then from there on out, we don't see a lot of them. Deep infections, we've had about 15 patients go through the program at UCSF so far. UC was the first program in the United States to do this. And we've only had one have a deep infection that got complicated.
And deep infection, you're talking about at the level of the bone or deep in the muscle, not at the superficial site.
Yeah, generally around the implant within the bone. And so that the problem with that is it can cause loosening of the implant. And so it either has to be explanted or it can fracture. So we have to be careful with that. But we've only had one person have it. There was a hygiene issue there as well, some dental issues. And so that probably affected it as well. And he was able to explant. He can still use a socket. So that's the nice thing about it. You pull the implant out and you can still use a socket.
That's great.
So he's right back to using the socket where he was before.
You mentioned some of the advantages in terms of proprioception, ability to use that muscle, ease of use, putting on and taking off, you know, donning and doffing that prosthetic, I'm guessing. Is it a better, do you get better integration? Is it, you know, better feel and use for that prosthetic as well?
Yeah, for sure. You know, the ease of donning and doffing is definitely there. We had one amputee who was a single upper extremity amputee and a contralateral lower extremity amputee. And so she only had one hand to do it with, which could be a little bit challenging because it's a screw tight type of contraption. And Axor has worked with the design over the last couple of years to try to improve it based on the feedback that we've given them. But, you know, for the most part, donning and doffing, so fast, so easy. They just slide it right on, it clicks, they lock it in, snug it tight, good to go. They just walk away. Versus sockets where you're like trying to get it on and the pin, right. If it's a pin, the pin might not line up. And so it's a lot easier.
Yeah, I've seen some Paralympic triathletes really show what a transition is like when they go from their cycling limb to their running blade or whatever they happen to be using. And some of those, I mean, they're crazy. I mean, yeah. How they're engineering and how they're able to do that. Oh, by the way, they might have just biked 50 miles and now they've got to go run a half a marathon and they're panting and they're still putting this thing, you know, this technology on there. So it's good that the technology is now starting to progress, and it really is that integration into the bone with the patients. That's great. What have you learned the most working with patients with living with amputation? What have they taught you?
Perspective, probably more than anything. You know, just having conversations with the patients about how they were before and how they are after. One of the stories I'll never forget was the first real amputee I ever worked with when I was a student. He was a bilateral amputee, transfemoral. This guy was amazing. And he said to me, you know, before I was an amputee, I was selfish. I lived my life for me. I didn't care about anybody else. I did what I wanted to do for me. And that's how I lived my life. He's like, and now this, I could have gone downhill with this. I'm so depressed. But the fact is, I'm going to turn this into a positive. I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to become a motivational speaker. I want to go run. I'm going to be a Paralympic athlete. I'm going to do all these things because I have a new lease on life. And for me, it was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing, right? Like, guy lost both of his legs and this is the attitude that he has. And so perspective for me was pretty huge to be able to see that and go, this is an amazing group of people. And this is something that I would love to work in to be able to help people who are going through this and maybe not having as easy of a transition through it.
That's huge. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned earlier taking the entire patient into account, and one being, hey, you have an amputation, but how that happened is going to be a big deal. And I remember in my neuro class, I mean, you just thinking about it, all the hair on my arm is standing up. And we had a gentleman come in and he lost one leg. He was like changing a tire for someone else on the side of the road. And somebody ran into the back of his car with his, you know, his tailgate up and completely severed it right there. And you want to talk about learning a lesson in PT school. And that's where like professors are really good. They know the patients that they can bring in time and time again. You could have heard a pin drop from a mile away. And we were just like, yes, paying attention to how that occurred. That never left me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you remember all the stories that you hear, right? And like, I remember a lot of stories that people have told me from as far as patients goes. I've had a lot of amazing patients with a lot of amazing stories, but the amputees are, you know, one of those groups that you never forget. Like you said, Paralympic athletes, those people are amazing. And so when you start to work with a few of them, you're like, well, this is impressive. This is something that's going to be, engraved in my brain for the rest of my life.
When you send students out to work with persons with amputation, what are like the three, like, you have to pay attention to's that you hit them, right? Because if you give students or new clinicians 20 things to remember, they're going to remember zero. If you give them three, you got a shot. So are there like this hit list for you, like the three things to pay attention to? Like, hey, you got a patient on your schedule, amputation, your mind's going in a million directions. Pay attention to these three. What are they?
Yeah, I mean, I would say number one is subjective, right? Listen to what they say, listen to why they're here, listen to what is actually going on. So the subjective portion for me with any patient, but with especially amputees, is especially important. Number two is don't be afraid to touch them. There's a big fear with students and kind of can I touch the limb? Can I not touch the limb? And it makes everything harder, both for the student and for the patient, right? If the patient feels like somebody's afraid to touch me, that's not helpful. And so I always say, they're another patient. Like, you've got to assess everything. You got to feel the patient. You got to feel the limb. You got to feel how the scar is on the end of it. And you need to really make sure that you're assessing that patient. So not being afraid to put hands on and get hands on is another component of it. And then number three, watch them move, right? Because the only way you're going to learn how amputees are supposed to move, the compensations that they have, what can be leading to what brings them in, is to watch them move, see what they can do, see how they can transfer, see how they can get on off the floor, see how they walk, see how they don their prosthetic. All that stuff is super important. So for me, it's those three things: subjective, don't be afraid to touch the patient, and watch them move.
Yeah. The second and third that you mentioned, I was completely guilty of in the lab that I just mentioned in PT school. Right. The guy just told me a story. So I believe me, I got it subjective. And that actually caused me to literally kind of just be further than arm's length. Yeah. And my professor was like, how are you going to assess this? And I was like, I just didn't want to, you know, he had an accident. This was years ago, but now he's sitting in front of you. Yes. You have to be able to put your hands on him. And then watching him move. I remember a lot of it was talking. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, he says he wants to walk up and down stairs. So have you thought to bring him outside to the stairs? And I was like, no, it was like this thing. I didn't want to get too close because, oh my gosh, you have an amputation. They're like, yeah, but you're a physical therapist. So you need to help me. So those number two and number three were definitely, I was completely guilty of in my first experience of working with someone.
I think it's common. We all run into it. I did it when I first started working with amputees. It was like, oh, what do I do? This is a totally new situation. And so I think it's a natural thing. That's why I always say, let's jump in, let's go. Cause yeah, they're not going to wait for us. So let's go.
Yeah. Any other advice for people who would like to get into this patient population? And that comes up a lot where people just, I don't even know. People just hear about it and all of a sudden they go into PT school and they're saying, hey, I'm going to do this. And then all of a sudden they go to a neural lab, they come across a patient or two and they're like, whoa, mind blown. Somebody wants to get a little more information or, you know, get some hands on and watch a move. What would you suggest?
Yeah, I would suggest just go and volunteer with them. You know, go to these locations that work with amputees regularly. Go to the VA, go to the neuro labs, go to any of these, you know, Paralympic training centers. You know, as PTs, we can go volunteer at the Paralympic Center in Colorado Springs if you apply for it. So you can go and work with them for a week or two. You know, these types of things that you can do where you're just getting more experience with it. You said it earlier, repetition, 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 right? So just go and get comfortable with it, get to know it, understand it, take Con Ed with it. I've taken some amazing Con Ed classes in amputees with people that have done it longer than me and have worked with a lot more than me. And so I've learned a lot from those situations. So just take all that Con Ed, go out, get the experience in. And I really think that that's the best thing that people can do as they start to work into that.
I tell students all the time, play that student card, man. Hey, I'm a student. Do you mind if I, you know, shadow, come to your whatever, I'll TA for your class, right? I'm not going to get credit, but I can, you know, you get knowledge. So I used to put my student card all the time. So osseointegration, that's kind of the bleeding edge right now. What's down the line? What's something that maybe isn't here in terms of working with patients living with amputation that you're like, hey, in 2, 5, 7 years, I'm going to be psyched for these things. What is it?
Yeah, I think a lot of what the future looks like is how we're going to integrate like EMG into the actual prosthetics themselves. And there's a lot of sensory systems coming out right now. MIT is working on one out with Brigham and Women's as part of our group a little bit, actually integrating some of these sensors into the osseointegration patients. And so
what sort of things they look at to measure? What sort of sensors are they?
So it's more utilizing the muscles that you have to function the like motorized prosthetic, right? So being able to close your hand without actually having to have like a cable strap around your back, being able to have a motorized knee and ankle that's not so heavy they can barely lift it, but can integrate into the muscles that you have there that's going to be able to get you function out of it and not have the weight and the craziness of trying to whip that thing through or, right. You know, the complexity of the microprocessor knees have been amazing, right? The C-leg is one of the greatest knees out there. And the X3, when it comes to the military, the thing's waterproof. You can walk through the water with it. It's amazing. But you still have to have a lot of strength and a lot of balance and a lot of function to be able to do it. And so it still takes a long time to train. So these microprocessor integrations into the muscle system are going to be something that's going to be pretty amazing in the future, I think. And I think we're going to see a lot of really cool things come out of these labs that are working with these patients.
Yeah. The future's really, really interesting when you start to get, I mean, I don't know, I'm 40 and I remember, like, you know, just going from Nintendo to Super Nintendo. I was like, this is amazing. And then you just leaps and bounds. The things that we're talking about right now, we're saying 5 years, but they're probably going to make us look bad and do it in a year and a half, which is fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember I went to I took a class out in Chicago at Shirley Ryan Institute, and they showed us a lab, and they showed us one of the legs that they were working on that had this EMG activation, these sensors, surface EMG sensors in the socket. And we watched a patient go up and down the stairs and made it look like nothing, right? And I've watched many patients go up and down with the prosthetic, and it looked like they didn't even have a prosthetic on, and I was mind blown. And this was 4 or 5 years ago. And so now it's like, whoa, okay, this is changing quickly, and we're going to see some amazing stuff coming out of these really smart people in these labs.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam chiming in saying lack of feeling of touch is the biggest reason he never wears a prosthesis. So to hear that, hey, I don't know. I'm not going to rule anything out in terms of what sensors can do or what sensation can do. I'm not going to put it past technology and innovation, because you never, I mean, this is the direction we're heading. A lot of times it was, as you're mentioning, based on cables or what was physically possible. Yeah. And now a lot of researchers, a lot of people way smarter than me, are sitting there and listening to people like Sam and saying, what's your biggest pain point? And then they just go, okay, I got it. And they go away and they go, let's just think about that. And that's a lot of times when people, you know, poo-poo research, like, why is this person randomly researching this thing? It's because you never know what that person's going to figure out and be able to integrate it into something completely non-connected to that. And that's where we have advancements. So
yeah,
I love that. Looking forward to some really, really cool stuff in the future. Are you ready to, play three questions?
Dive in. Let's do it.
Three questions brought to you by our friends at Aureus Medical Staffing. Find them online at AURUSmedical.com. Leaders in travel physical therapy. We're talking about, you know, people looking for positions all across the country. And there, where there are people, there are needs, right, for physical therapists, essential workers. So find out where you might be able to do the thing that you want to do, where it's needed, which is be a great physical therapist, anywhere in the 50 U.S. states, all different settings too, because a lot of people hear travel PT and they just think, outpatient ortho, we're talking inpatient, we're talking outpatient, ortho, neuro, peds, geriatrics, you name it. Yes, Hawaii has been on the list. Yes, Alaska, people are there. They need PTs. So find them online, AURUSmedical.com. Again, that is AURUSmedical.com. Go there and find out what is available for you. First question, Danny, is a where question. You're in California, but if you had carte blanche, you can go anywhere you want in the country for 3 months, which is the typical length of a travel assignment. Where would you go?
Oh, that's a good question. Anywhere in the country. I did a rotation in Seattle when I was in grad school. Loved it. Pac Northwest is one of my favorite places. So I'd probably go up to Seattle. Love Seattle.
Some good areas up there, and some great hiking just north of there as well. Second question is a what question. What's something you've read, watched, or listened to, a book, movie, podcast, whatever, that you think the audience could get value from in any way?
Oh man, you know, this is going to sound funny, but I actually love this podcast by Dax Shepard. Armchair Expert.
Yeah.
Got it. It's an amazing, amazing podcast. He brings in some people who you would never think that these deep conversations would happen. And I've had my mind blown by actors that I've seen on movies that I, you know, wouldn't think that anything would go that deep. Even Dax, I mean, he's an amazing guy. So that's probably been the one that I've recommended the most.
Who would have thought Dax, who was essentially like the plant from Punk'd, right? He was just the guy who was always thrown under the bus and Punk'd.
Yeah.
Dax Shepard, now married to Kristen Stewart. And, you know,
Kristen Bell.
My apologies.
Frozen, man. Come on.
Sorry. I'll let it go. Third question is a who question. Who should the audience know more about?
Oh man, that's a hard question.
It is.
So many people, right? You, Jimmy, more people should know about you.
I don't know about that.
You know, I mean, there's so many people that have influenced me that I think deserve a lot of credit. I got to give credit to my mentor, Chris DiPrato. He runs cup therapy. You know, he does a really good job of trying to put evidence behind the use of suction cups in therapy. It's a big hot topic. It's a obviously controversial topic, but he really tried to put the science behind it, does MRI studies at UCSF on it. And so I got to give him a lot of credit. I think he's somebody a lot of people should know about, and I think he's got a lot of good information.
I think we just found another future episode because I don't know a ton about it. I know this much, but over a beer, I might learn some more. All right, that's three questions. Again, thank you to friends from Aureus Medical Staff and for keeping the show on the air. Tribal Physical Therapy, A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com. Last thing we do on the show, Danny, is the parting shot. Parting shot is brought to you by our friends from the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy. Find them online at orthopt.org. Doing some contesting with these guys too. They have a lot of these independent study courses, the ISCs, independent study course. Yeah, that's what they are. Con Ed. So if you're looking to level up your orthopedic game, who better to do it with than the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy? Tissue Tolerance was one they just released, Running Athlete, and of course all the CP, they got CPGs coming out your ears, man. CPGs. So look for them. They're the leaders. So orthopt.org. Parting shot, Danny. Your last chance for a mic drop moment, some sentiment to leave with the audience as we wrap the episode up. What do you got?
Oh man. I don't know. They're putting me on the spot.
That's what we do for people on the spot. But really, you know, like what's it probably simple for you in terms of a mic drop moment, but for people who are either getting into working with persons with amputation or looking forward to it, what do you think? What's their mic drop?
I think, you know, this population is underestimated. And I think a lot of people are nervous to go out and go work with them. And I think it's one of the best things you can do. Take a chance, take a risk, jump outside your comfort zone. In everything that you do in PT, but really go out there, jump in, try it out, work with these people, get to know them. And I think you're going to love it. I think it's going to be super exciting.
I love it. That's perfect advice. That's great advice. It's good to hear. Like, and I think you need to hear that a lot. You need to be pushed and pushed and pushed. Hey, this is comfortable. This is going to feel weird at first. And then you're going to do it more. It's going to feel less weird. So if you're interested at all, jump right in or reach out the Bowtie PT on Twitter. Danny, appreciate your time. We'll get into some more topics later. Definitely think we should do the cupping episode. I do like that.
Let's
do it. Things you don't know about. So we'll talk about that. But thanks for your time. Appreciate it. We'll talk again soon. Okay.
Hey, cheers.
Cheers.
Love the PT Pinecast?
Yes. Yes.
Support the show by telling a friend or by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play.
All right. Show today brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offering continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, 6 PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what they can do for you to support your professional development at brooksihl.org. Our home on the internet.
ptpintcast.com.
Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC.
It's poured fresh by me,
physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
Ingredients are sourced by our chief connections officer,
Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
And it's brewed fresh by producer and physical therapist,
Juliet Dassinger.
And by producer and creator, second-year PT student,
Bridget Nolan from Sacred Heart University.
PT Pinecast is a podcast that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight, remarkable ideas, and motivational stories.
Make sure to follow us online
at PT Pinecast and
subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love it.
I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you found value in the show, all we ask
is that you tell a friend.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.